This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
On today's program, we air a tribute to Ben Chalcis, founder of KC Food Circle and an organizer of the Green Party. He has recently passed away. But first, the environmental news for the week of 11/26 on Eco Radio KC. My name is Teresa Wilkie. Democracy Now! Reports, leaders of the U.S. fossil fuel industry knew as early as 1954 that carbon dioxide pollution accumulating in the atmosphere posed a growing threat to life on Earth, but failed to warn the public. That's according to new research published by Stanford historian in the journal Nature Climate Change. He found that in the 1950s, the American Petroleum Institute commissioned a study by a Caltech scientist which concluded global CO2 levels had risen by 5% in a century. It's the earliest known industry-funded research into climate change, and the findings led in part to a 1965 report by President Lyndon Johnson's Science Advisory Committee on the threat posed by global warming. Speaking to members of an oil industry conference that year, the American Petroleum Institute warned, "This report unquestionably will fan emotions, raise fears, and bring demand for action. The substance of the report is that there is still time to save the world's people from the catastrophic consequence of pollution, but time is running out." Then the American Petroleum Institute would instead go on to fund decades of climate change denial while fighting efforts to switch to renewable energy sources. The governments of the United States and Canada warned that all romaine lettuce recently purchased or currently for sale is unsafe to eat in any form. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control warned that the lettuce is at risk of containing a dangerous type of E. coli bacteria and should be thrown away. Last spring, an E. coli outbreak linked to romaine killed 5 people and sickened more than 200 others. That outbreak followed a decision by the Trump administration to shelve water testing rules crafted under President Obama that could have prevented the outbreak. Reuters reports, climate change will cost the United States economy hundreds of billions of dollars by the end of the century, hitting everything from health to infrastructure, according to a government report issued last Friday. And the White House called the report inaccurate. The Fourth National Climate Assessment, a congressionally mandated report written with the help of more than a dozen United States government agencies and departments, outlined the projected impact of global warming on every corner of American society in a dire warning that is at odds with the Trump administration's pro-fossil fuels agenda. Global warming would disproportionately hurt the poor and broadly undermine human health, the report said, but it added that projections of further damage could change if greenhouse gas emissions are sharply curbed. The report clashes with policy that President Donald Trump, who's been rolling back Obama-era environmental and climate protections to maximize production of domestic fossil fuels, including crude oil. Already, the United States has the highest production of domestic fuel in the world, above Saudi Arabia and Russia. White House spokeswoman Lindsay Walters said the new report was largely based on the most extreme scenario. Trump and several members of his cabinet have repeatedly cast doubt on the science of climate change, arguing that the causes and impacts are not yet settled. Environmental groups said the report reinforced their calls for the United States to act on climate change. 13 government departments and agencies compiled the new report. It can be viewed at www.globalchange.gov. USA Today reports, this holiday season collides with what has become known as the Great Recycling Crisis. Earlier this year, China, which for years has been America's go-to nation for processing recyclables, started rejecting all but the cleanest, purest loads. This caused recyclables to pile up and prices to plummet. Values have fallen by half from pre-crisis levels. Cities across the United States are imposing higher collection fees, eliminating items they're willing to pick up, or in a few cases, weighing whether to curtail recycling altogether. This is not good news for the environment. Roughly 35% of the nation's total waste is diverted to recycling. The crisis can be addressed in large measure by the way Americans recycle. Clean and sort recyclable waste. Cardboard boxes are recyclable, but not if they're smeared with battery acid or turkey grease. Some junk should not be in the recycling at all, such as spent garden hoses, lawn chairs, or the industry's top bugaboo, plastic bags.
And good evening and welcome to Eco Radio KC. Thanks to Teresa Wilkie for producing the news headlines for us. My name is Mike Murphy. We've got a special program tonight. We're going to pay tribute to environmental visionary Ben Chelsis, who died earlier this month at the age of 95. And Ben has been going at it a lot longer than a lot of us. And so we want to pay tribute. We've got a couple of special people in the studio. We'd also want to open the phone lines. If you knew Ben, we'd love to hear your reflections as well. That number, write it down, 816-931-5534. But we do have some very special folks in the studio. Of course, Richard Mabian is in here. Hi, Richard.
Hey, what's going on, Mike? What's up, folks?
And then, of course, we'd like to welcome back into the fold Steve Mann back to Eco Radio. Thank you, Steve, for coming in.
Well, thank you, Mike. Appreciate that.
All right. So we are here to pay tribute to Ben Chelsis. What say you guys?
Boy, I am just – I'm so thankful that we have this opportunity. I was very disappointed that I had to be away when we had his memorial service, and when Mike called and said we was going to do this, I was just really just thrilled to death. I can't think of a person who I would want to give any more credit to for me being here. I'm not saying individually he was by himself, but Ben is responsible for me becoming the person of color environmentalist that I have become in not just only Kansas City, but across this nation. He's like my scientist, Craig Vollen, or even Steve Mann sitting here, who was also very instrumental. And I got a lady out there I got to give tribute to, Nessie Lane Giesel. Those people gave me my foundation as far as being able to speak the truth, being able to research and know what you're talking about and not just talk off the top of your head. And Ben was very instrumental in making that happen.
Yes, I met Ben at the Coming Home to Eat conference in 2007. I was actually there as a KKFI volunteer recording, helping record that for later on-air program. And I was very impressed about that conference. And Ben was the producer of that conference, along with a number of other Greens and John Kerman, who I think is going to call in later today, tonight. And one of the main things that really got me going from that conference is that I found out we only have 4 days' worth of food in Kansas City or any major city on the shelves and in warehouses. We are constantly being supplied by food trucks, right. You know, trains, even airplanes now. But if that transportation system somehow gets curtailed or something happens, we've got 4 days' worth of food. And Ben was very, very adamant that this is not acceptable for an advanced democracy to have that much food insecurity. And people don't even know about it. They don't know what peril they face. And I'm not saying this to scare them. I'm saying this to maybe wake people up to the fact that they need to do something about their own food security.
Yeah, I agree. And Ben was he was a natural born teacher, if I may use that for lack of a better word. He spent his life, like his mission was to teach people what you just said about what the food equations were in this country, because he knew people didn't know. He spent more time, I think, teaching the adult population than, and I'm talking about us, than other people do. Then we don't have that right now. Right now we just have people that make speeches. But he went into depth about, just like you mentioned, about how far our food has to travel I think he, when I had met David Corton before I met him, I think I was at that 2007 session you just talked about, because I joined KKFI so I could have a voice for Quindaro. Yeah. And so when you went to that, I was there, and John Kerman, the same, we met all each other around the same time. And I think that's the thing that made me decide that food was an area to reach people, especially in the low-income communities, because everybody eats food. And if you can find ways to get people to understand, if we don't start doing it locally, that's what made Joe Jenny's thing so popular. But if you don't start finding ways to grow food locally and being able to buy from local growers, you're going to end up, if the economy keeps going as it's going and gas was going like it was back in those days, people could be paying because our apples were coming from Australia, you know, and that's a long trip, 1,500 miles to get apples over here, or whatever it was, and that's ridiculous for that to happen.
Well, it's really sad. They actually send apples from Washington to China, put wax on them, and send them back.
Well, that's unreal. See, that's what we're dealing with. That's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, crazy. Crazy stuff going on.
And I didn't know about a green party per se. I knew about the people that was responsible for. I knew about Ralph Nader, and I knew about those things, the Exxon or whatever that was they were dealing with. Yeah. But I didn't understand the extent of the Green Party until I met Ben.
Well, Ben was one of the founders of the U.S. Greens.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 84, I think, they had the first bioregional conference where things started getting really exciting, because the German Greens had just got 5% of representation in the German parliament, Bundeswehr snatch or whatever it is over there. But anyway, he was a visionary. He collaborated with people, worked with people, went to conferences all over the country.
Oh, yes.
And brought that knowledge back to Kansas City and then organized. He was a community organizer.
Yes.
He had a master's in community organization with the University of Missouri, and he was a minister. These are things that we didn't even know about him when we were working with him, because he was a humble guy, and we didn't even know that he was one of the Unitarian ministers that went to Selma, Alabama in 1965, when that other minister, Rube, was killed by white men with clubs.
Okay.
Ben was there. He's on
there.
The ground.
Right.
He had that commitment, and he brought that to everything he did. You know, love, sharing, all these are attributes that this man that we were honoring tonight brought to the table.
You know, and his role in development of the food circle here.
Oh, my goodness.
God, I mean, to be able to meet people who are pioneers, and really all of us are. I mean, I even put myself in it because of the nature of the people of color community. But you know, you are Steve, and that's where Ben was. I mean, it put us on a different level of conversation. I had an article that he sent to me, and I noticed that when he sent it, he would send it to people. He sent it to all of us. He wouldn't just send it to one or two people. He talked to us as a group. He was involved. He said, "Hey folks, here's a great material from Sam Smith, publisher of Progressive Review and Undernews. It's long, but in these difficult times, it's a must read," Ben tells us. And it says, where change really comes from. And I'm telling y'all right now, I'm going to ask Mike to put it on our website when we get a chance. I told him I was going to send it to him so he could put it on there. But I think it would behoove all of you listening to this to read this article, because he delves into why we are where we are in 2018, when in 2008, when this article came out, there was all the expectations in the world that we were getting ready to start doing what they had done over there in Germany, in that name of that town that you couldn't get out.
If you'd like to join the conversation, the number to call is 816-931-5534. We're talking about Ben Chelsis, who passed away earlier this month at the age of 95. And as has been already mentioned, Ben was the founder of the Kansas City Food Circle, as well as one of the founders of the National Green Party and here locally in Kansas City. We'd love to hear from you if you've worked with Ben or if you have any great stories to share with Ben. Give us a call, 816-931-5534. Hey, Richard, you had said you had this article posted on your website.
At the website and during the conference.
Give the website.
2000, it's breakingthesilence.us, and it's in 2011 conference, that particular year.
Right.
And well, Ben is in there, and this article is associated with him.
So this article was written by Ben, and it was actually dates back to 1998, from what I understand. It was originally in the Populist magazine. And the title of the article is Food Circles Help Develop Sustainable Food System. Corporate control of the food system is now nearly total. We are separated from farms where food is grown. We are separated from where food is processed. Nearly one-third of the vegetables and one-fourth of all food that reaches our table are imported from other countries. In large measure, we have lost control of our food system. But the news is not all bad. There is a stirring of a new way of thinking about the food system. We see the launching of alternative sustainable food projects, including the formation of food circles. While the corporate structure continues to push for globalization of the food system, we are witnessing an increase of local self-reliant food systems. Food circles are a key to developing an integrated, regional-based, sustainable food system. Basically, the food circle is a holistic, ecologically based approach to dealing with the food system. Food circles link consumers, farmers, small-scale growers, retailers, nutritionists, environmentalists, public advocates, and extension agencies, and others in a creative and comprehensive effort to work for a sustainable, just, and sensible food system for communities and regions. Food circles promote sustainable agriculture and a gentle stewardship of the land. The call is for us to reclaim our responsibility and control of the food system. So I'm going to kind of excerpt this, not read this whole article, but here's some key points where he talks about what here in Kansas City. Kansas City Greens accepted the challenge and took the first steps in creating the Kansas City Food Circle, which we understand became the first regional application of the food circle concept. The food circle evolved from a project of the Kansas City Greens called the Organic Connection, which in 7 workshops and conferences through a 10-year period dealt with such topics as safe food, community-supported agriculture, sustainable agriculture, and urban partnerships. So here's some of their accomplishments, as Ben listed back then. We set up a distribution center that linked the Franklin Co-op store in Kansas City, Kansas, with the Kansas Rural Center. During the growing season, farmers deliver fresh, organic, regionally grown produce to the co-op store and an expanded community-supported agriculture project. Over 50 families are involved. It was encouraging that the Franklin Co-op had a waiting list of 100 families. We established a hotline and voicemail number to inform consumers on how to contact regional organic farmers. Keep in mind, this was in the early days of the internet, so hotlines were still a go-to way to go this. We published a brochure about the food circle. Through public meetings and tabling at farmers markets and community fairs, we continued to build our membership base. We established a speakers bureau, spoke at college classes, church functions, EPA staff luncheons, and community action programs. And I can just go on and on here, but again, Richard has this whole article posted at breakingthesilence.us.
Yeah.
I think we're going to take our first break. But why don't we have, if this would be a great time, if you want to call in, we can get you queued into the system. But we'll be back with Steve Mann and Richard Mabian talking about Ben Chelsis, and we'd love to include you in that as well.
Tell your smart speaker, play KKFI, and enjoy the programming you love. KKFI, wherever you are.
All right, this is Richard Mabian, and if you want to join this conversation, come on and give us a call. Don't wait until the last minute to do so. 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534.
You never know what you're going to hear on Radioactive Magazine. We might be discussing racism or climate change or Palestinian rights or a dozen other social justice issues, featuring interviews by activists from ACLU, Indivisible KC, Black Lives Matter, many more. Whatever the topic, we promise a thought-provoking discussion. That's Radioactive Magazine's Tuesday, 6 to 6:30 p.m., right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Benjamin Hett.
There are historians who tell us Hitler's what happens when you have too much democracy. And there are historians who tell us Hitler's what happens when you don't have enough democracy.
How did Hitler happen? On Alternative Radio, Wednesday morning at 9.
Wetlands, extreme rain, and climate change on this current cast. Wetlands were once seen as boggy, buggy swamps with no value. Many were filled in and paved over to make room for new development. William Kuhn, a hydrologist with the U.S. Geological Survey, says today we know better.
They allow for the water in the system to spread out, to slow down.
The more it rains, the more critical it is to have wetlands to slow and store water and to filter pollutants. And since climate change is predicted to bring more extreme rain events to the Northeast and Midwest, wetlands will be a critical line of defense. So preserving them is more important than ever as we brace for the wild weather coming our way. Earlier episodes of Current Cast are available online. Current Cast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future, supported by New York's Environmental Protection Fund and Sea Grant, online at currentcast.org.
And we do have a couple of callers. We'll take our first one. It's John Kerman, another alum of Eco Radio KC. Welcome back to Eco Radio, John.
Thank you, Mike. Good evening, Steve. Good evening, Richard. Yeah, it is a little reunion here.
Yeah,
unfortunate
John.
For
John's
the circumstances that bring us all together.
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you want to share with us about Ben Chelsea's?
I think the first thing I want to share, because I might forget if I don't once I start talking about Ben, is we need to give props to Dee Barry while we're here tonight, who is still with us. Dee and Ben were very much a dynamic duo for many, many years with the Kansas City Greens. I think it's safe to say that Ben could not have accomplished all that he did without Dee as a partner in all of this. So shout out to Dee Barry if by any chance she's listening out there. As to Ben, I don't remember when Ben and I first met, but I'm thinking it has to be at least 20 years ago, which is probably why I don't remember. And it was probably either something related to food or something related to the Green Party. I do remember going to a meeting about the Green Party at a church in South KC. Maybe that was the first time, but regardless, Ben and I worked together on various things over the years. I was a member of the coordinating committee of the Food Circle in the early to mid-2000s that I worked on that, and Ben was part of that as well. We worked together to plan the Coming Home to Eat conference with Dee Barry, and I believe Dee was part of that. And Richard, I was thinking you were part of that planning
as
well.
Yes, I was there too.
I know
me too.
I'm pretty darn sure that's how we met. Steve and I met, as I recall. So that was what, 2008?
Yeah,
2007. Yes. And Ben and I also we're part of the planning for these sort of progressive networking events that at least a couple of them that I worked on and with, and I think there were more than that. At least one of them was called June Moon Madness, and they were benefits for KKFI well to tie things together. And that would have been, what, in the second term of the George W. Bush administration?
Yeah, that's probably a good guess. Yeah.
So Ben and I worked together on many things over the years. We shared an interest in peak oil, which isn't getting talked about much these days, but it was the threat of peak oil and how that could impact our food supply, which brought us both to work on the Coming Home to Eat conference. We were both deeply concerned about that. I still am deeply concerned about it, since it's only a question of when, not if, peak oil will happen.
Mm-hmm.
The thing, you know, I admired a lot of things about Ben, and I should probably point out that just because I admired a lot of things about Ben, that didn't mean we agreed on everything all the time. For one thing, I became disillusioned with the Green Party avenue way back when, even before the 2000 election, whereas Ben, I think, still saw it as a viable option right up until the end. But regardless, even when Ben and I disagreed, we were able to disagree agreeably. So he was such a gentleman in the truest sense of the word, so soft-spoken, but so, under most circumstances, certainly when he needed to be, he could be more forceful. But he was always deeply committed, always had integrity, and I had such tremendous respect for Ben. But as I said at his memorial, and I don't know if you plan to play that or not, Mike, the thing I admired most about Ben was his sustained commitment over all the time that I knew him for sure, but I learned at his memorial service just how much time he had spent on this before I ever met him. I knew he had been working on food issues since the 80s, but I did not know anything about his history with Unitarian Universalism and his involvement in the civil rights movement that you talked about earlier, Steve, and just decades. It's this sustained commitment that was most admirable, because I've seen people who throw themselves into this kind of work and then become frustrated or wear themselves out or give in to despair. And the other thing I said at the memorial was that I was sorry, deeply sorry for all of us that Ben did not live to see the great turning he spent so much of his life working toward come about. But the thing about social change, the thing about cultural change, is that you don't know when you're on the cusp of really broad, deep change. You can be right on the edge of it and really not know that, because it's such a mysterious process, this tipping point where things go from changing slowly, too slowly, to suddenly changing very, very quickly. And so that's why the kind of sustained commitment that Ben showed is so important. And the lesson we take from Ben is that we marathon runners, those of us who have been at this for years now, need to keep running, because we might be closer than we think. Mm-hmm. We might be closer than it seems to getting to that tipping point and really beginning to change things in a big, big way. Of course, it's the most important work to be done anyway, so it's essential we keep at it. But
John, I want to jump in with you, John.
We could be closer than we think.
Yeah, I want to jump in with you, John, right quick, because it's ironic that you brought up Dee Barry's name, because we were just talking about her during the break, because we were going there, and you may have been at her house, I'm not for sure, when John Rensenbrink was in town in 2008. Did you make that session?
I didn't make it to that.
Okay, no. You didn't make that session. Thing that happened there that was so profound, and I speak about it all the time, and it may have a lot to do with what we're dealing with. Now, don't take it wrong, because when I say this, people take it wrong. But John had said that he hoped that the environmental movement was the first movement since the civil rights movement that actually stood a chance to change policies in this country. And he said, but he hoped that the environmental leaders did not make the same mistake that the civil rights leaders made and allow the movement to become a political issue. Now, I, of anyone sitting in that room, probably understood, because you know I was the only black person in there, that probably understood exactly what he was talking to, because I lived through the civil rights movement. And with all the great changes that could occur, I knew what he said when it became a political issue, because it had become that about in the 70s, and it has remained there since. And so the progress that we really wanted to make failed. It hasn't occurred. And so I knew what he was talking about, and I took my marching orders from there. Now, you just said something about the closeness of where we're trying to go. Ben's thing was to put the emphasis on people, not politics, even though politics was there. It had to be addressed. But he constantly put the emphasis on winning over people, because in the long run, regardless of what you're doing, having the numbers has more to do with the success ratio than it does with the political stature, okay? So I see that, and that's one of the things that I know we got from him. And yes, D. Berry, 100% a trooper, and both of them were very instrumental in getting us to where we are.
John, one thing I thought that was that also that you said at Ben's memorial was like, it's not like Kansas City wouldn't have had a local food movement. It just would have been a lot later to the table if it weren't for Ben Chelsis. And Ben, Richard and I were talking outside earlier. Nowadays, words like locavore, that's a hip term to eat local, but it wasn't when Ben was, you know, first putting this food circle together. John, I'm going to ask you to stay on as long as you can, but I'm also going to bring Jeff Humfeld into the conversation as well. Are you with us, Jeff?
Yes, I am.
All right. And what say you, Jeff?
Well, much like John, I don't remember when I actually met Ben, but, you know, it may actually go back to that bioregional movement that Steve Mann talked about, which actually started in the early 80s. And I know that that Ben and I both attended some of the OAC conferences, the Ozark Area Community Congress conferences, at the same time, but I don't remember which ones they were. I went to some of the early ones, and then I didn't go again for some time, and then went back. But, you know, that was probably one of the places that Ben probably was, because that was probably the first time I had ever heard about the Green Party. In fact, I still have a book that was written about the Green Party in Germany that was at that time something pretty new, even then over there. So, you know, those seeds were set a lot further back than I think a lot of people realize. And, you know, that may very well be where Ben heard his, you know, first contact with the Green Party and the whole concept. And that one thing I will say for those Arts Area Community Congresses, that they were one of the two first bioregional congresses in the United States to start meeting. There was one in L.A., I believe it was, that met at the same time, basically. But, you know, the thing about Ben was, as everybody has said, you know, that he was a teacher, but I think he was a visionary in a lot of ways, in that he could paint a picture for you about what really was and what was to be, you know, if we don't do something about it, and what could be if we did do something about it. You know, I've been friends with him and his friends, his family, for a long time now, and what can I say? I learned a lot, and he guided me in ways I didn't even realize until much later. So,
it's great to hear all of us, all five of us, sharing our memories about Ben. But I'd like to hear from Ben himself. Earlier today, I looked on and Ben and Dee appeared on Radioactive Magazine in October of 2014, and this was just after the People's Climate March. And so I took out some choice nuggets from Ben, so I'll let us listen to some of what Ben had to say on the subject of ecological literacy.
And recognizing the crucial nature of the many problems we're dealing with today, it's absolutely important that we deal with the ability to understand the basic principles of ecology, and also that we recognize that the need for to have critical skills in dealing with the fact then that ecological understanding and wisdom must be central in facing especially this very crucial problem of climate disturbance.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and share another clip from that same interview in October of 2014.
I think what's really crucial is to understand a very close relationship between human beings and nature itself. There is a Native American statement to the effect that we are part of the web of life, and the web of life is part of us, and that we need to understand the crux of that so that realizing what we're doing presently in terms of the use of fossil fuels and the effects of climate change, climate disruption, that indeed being that we are part of the web of life, what we are doing to the web of life, we are doing to ourselves. I mean, again, we are part of the web of life, and if we can fully understand that principle, we then can be in a position to take steps in turning some things around.
Okay, Jeff, John, Steve, Richard, I've got more of these clips to play, but I'm just curious if anyone had any other comments or wanted to share something that hasn't been said yet.
It's good to hear Ben's voice again. It's a little eerie because of just the context of knowing that he's gone. Jeff, you mentioned the word visionary for Ben, and that was a word that came up repeatedly at the memorial service. And it's so true that that Ben was one of those people who saw things among the earliest who saw them. As you said, Mike, I also talked about at the memorial how there surely would have arisen some kind of local food movement in Kansas City, because food movements arose around the country and in other places around the world without Ben Celsius. But it was his ability to see what needed to be done before most people were seeing it that made it happen so early and gave us such a strong and vibrant movement here in Kansas City, and gave birth to, really, in some sense, other organizations like Cultivate KC and what is it, Steve? The Sweet Potato Project and Food Not Lawns and more and more. But the other thing I was thinking about while we were listening to Ben talk was that Ben was by no means just an idea man. He was more than willing. In fact, as Craig Ballin said to me, said in his remarks, he wasn't able to be at the memorial either, but he sent remarks for Brandy Schoen of the Food Circle to read. Ben loved conferences. He showed up for the meetings. He did the kind of day in, day out work that can be tedious, frankly, but is absolutely necessary to the actual organizing that puts visionary ideas into practice.
He didn't just come up with ideas and pass them off or leave them live for somebody else to make into reality. He was quite willing to take the time away, frankly, from more fun stuff and to take time away from his family. And let's give props to Ben's family. Oh, I don't know if they always said goodbye to him as he headed out the door to another green party or food circle or healthcare or whatever event or meeting with happiness, but they gave him to us in some sense and gave up time with him so that we could all benefit from Ben's hard work. So I think that's really something we should honor about Ben's life as well.
Yeah, okay. I do. He was very much willing to reach out to help others. And even in his comments, you know, he was speaking from a it's you perspective. I mean, what's going on is coming, something that we're doing to ourselves. We are the ones that are causing this planet to be destroyed. And that was a message that I heard from him and picked up from him very quickly.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take our second break. Guys, hang on if you can. Oh. And we'll be back coming out of this break.
Riverwalkers follows a sacred walk along the polluted Housatonic River in Massachusetts. While mostly ceremonial, it also brought people together and helped raise awareness of rivers in general. Why don't you take a walk on the wild side? On Wings, Saturday afternoon at 2:30.
This retired federal employee Bill Claw is encouraging all my federal employee friends to please consider supporting KKFI during this year's combined federal campaign. That's CFC code 21994. Just a few dollars a week on payroll deductions won't mean much to you, but it'll mean big bucks to us at KKFI. So please consider supporting KKFI. That's agency code 21994.
And I think there are other dimensions here. Certainly one dimension is in terms of perceptions and how these have developed. I can't help but think of how there is a relatedness here in terms of beginnings. For example, the three large world religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Muslim, that all three somehow saw the human as somehow above nature. And that has permeated, I think, all through the ages. And this has been picked up by the Industrial Revolution. It's been picked up by the capitalist system. And so here we have this approach that somehow the earth is an object that, yes, indeed, we can exploit. We can take resources because it would be then needed for development as the human saw it. And again, what we need to be doing is getting maybe back very far back and take on approaches which the indigenous peoples have, how close, again, we are with nature. We are part of nature.
And again, that was Ben Chelsis from Radioactive Magazine, another program I heard on KKFI from 4 years ago, talking about ecological illiteracy.
He was 91.
right. He was 91 at that time. That's right.
At that time, he was also working the gardens over on Chestnut Avenue, where we have the resource center.
Tell us about that, Jeff.
Well, he and the name's escaping me right at the moment. There were two guys that worked those gardens and helped build those gardens that were over there, and we ended up moving up the block, and now we have some new garden plots and all. And of course, by that time, Ben was not strong enough to help with those, but he gave his support in whatever way that he could, even when he was unable to give his physical support.
Explain to folks who may not know what this resource center is, so just to get a sense of another pie Ben had his fingers in.
Basically, it's a family resource center that's on the 3800 block of Chestnut Avenue, which is a couple blocks east of Prospect. And it's kind of a model block idea. We're trying to show the rest of the block and the rest of the neighborhood, you know, it doesn't take, you know, if you work together, you can actually build your own oasis in the middle of some pretty difficult conditions. And, you know, if the city's not going to take care of that side of the town, well, then it's up to the residents to do it themselves. And Ben was, you know, one of those people that, like I say, he lent his himself physically to help with the gardens there and came and worked in the heat and watered and all of those things. And being there was no water, you know, available, it had to be come brought in by buckets and things of that sort. But, you know, he was also one of those sages that you know, had a lot of experience in organizing that helped us organize the neighborhood, people, and our own selves, for that matter, into this effort. And it's a meeting place now for neighborhood people, for a number of different organizations, and also, you know, there's a connection with grandparents raising children, their grandchildren. So it's, you know, that's really who it's meant to serve, is the older people and the youngest people.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Let's hear another clip from Ben. Let's hear Ben again.
Well, the mention should be made of the author, Krzysztof Kapra, who is the director of the group called who deals with ecological literacy, and he is saying that there is the need then to protect the natural world, the ecosystems. That it's really imperative then to be with that approach, to be thinking of the survival of the planet itself. Value has become a basic principle for strategic planning and action in dealing then encountering climate disruption. And so that what's really needed is for our politicians, for business leaders, and really at our educational level itself, is that we understand again the crucial need to be understanding the basic principles of ecology.
And again, that's Ben Chelsis from October of 2014. Steve, you wanted to talk about Ben's community organizing?
Yes. We've talked a lot about some of the things that he helped organize, and this is one of the beauties of Ben. He was always active. He was an active participant in what was going on, and I remember Richard started the Breaking the Silence conference in the fall of 2007, and Ben and Dee were at those meetings.
Yeah.
Ben was helping organize that with you, Richard.
Right.
At the Coming Home to Eat conference, Ben had a breakout session where we started the Food Not Lawns Kansas City. He helped organize that. He helped, you know, he was the convener. He's the one that, you know, got people there for the meetings to set it up. And he went on to do the Sweet Potato Project, work with the city to get sweet potatoes in as a landscape plant in parks and in public places. He worked with the transition movement here in Kansas City to kind of get people's focus on what's going to happen after peak oil, or what's going to happen when we have a descent from our energy, you know, peak. You know, how are we going to live? How do we organize cities so that we don't have a collapse? So Ben was an organizer. He was a trained organizer, and this was the constant throughout his life, was working with other people to reach a goal that really embodied Christianity. You know,
right.
Love your neighbor, love yourself. You know, love the world. That was a lot about Ben is love.
Yeah, and just to follow up on your comments about community organizing, and it, once you get this article on the website, it says, who needs the skill of a community organizer when you can go to Harvard's business schools, except for one problem. The corporate-based system that has seized control of our politics lacks the interest, imagination, integrity, capacity, and soul to produce positive change. Whatever the sign on the side of the political machine says, whatever the TV commercial claims, however many times the candidate chants the word change, we have, in fact, systematically been destroying the means by which we once achieved what it is we say we want. That's what's been, when I first read that, that's Ben's message. I mean, it was pretty much, it's you. If you want to do something about it, it's going to take you being responsible to get up off your butt and get it done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. Let's go to another clip of Ben. Again, this is all from a Radioactive Magazine program here on KKFI from October of 2014. And you can find this yourself, this whole program, by going to kkfi.org and putting Chelsea's in the search. But that's a lot easier than it sounds because you got to know how to spell Chelsea's. And it's K-J-E-L-S-H-U-S. All right, here's Ben.
Beautiful. And it really points out the fact that we need to be thinking in a transformation in terms of our perceptions. We were talking earlier about the earlier perception that even began during the formation of the big religions. And now then there is the dire need, imperative, that we have a change in perceptions. And again, it points back, I think, to the wonderful work of Friedrich Capra, and I would like to mention his book, The Web of Life, which is only one of the books that he has read. But I'd like to refer to a very brief quote that is in his book, which I think really points to a central theme of really what we're talking about. And this little quote is really inspired by Chief Seattle. And it reads, "This we know, all things are connected, like the blood which unites one family. Whatever befalls the earth, befalls the sons and daughters of the earth. Man did not weave the web of life. He is merely a strand in it. Whatever he does to the web, he does to himself."
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
He likes that web of life, and I think that's very important.
Yeah.
Capra was one of the leaders of the deep green ecology movement back in the early 70s, I think.
Yeah. John, you were going to say something?
Yeah, Mike, thanks for unearthing those clips, having the idea to do that. That was a great addition. The thing I wanted to point to in both the last one and a couple clips ago was how Ben would make the point that at root, at base, our ecological crisis wasn't a matter of technology. It wasn't a matter of policy. It wasn't a matter even of economics. It was at root religious in its nature. And what I mean by that is that it's at root a question of what is life about? What is humanity's place here? What is our purpose here? And those are fundamentally religious questions. And And in some sense, it will take a religious awakening of some kind for us to really turn things around. Once we have that kind of awakening, we'll change policy, we'll change technology, we'll change economies, we'll change it all if we change the way we think about humanity's role here as part of the world.
Well said. I do have one more clip, a short one to share with Ben, and we'll come out of this and do our wrap up. So here's our final thing from Ben.
Well, I think one thing would be that in the face then of the destructive actions of the industrial system, the capitalist system, and its effect destructive approaches relating to the environment, we would recognize that there needs to be a declaration of the principles of ecological literacy, that it is paramount that we do so, realizing then the importance of living within the ecological caring capacity of the earth becomes absolutely necessary.
All right, and that's the last of the clips we have from Ben, and we've just got a minute and a half left. So, what final words do people want to share?
I want to follow up on what John just said, John. Especially with the spirituality that goes in with the people of color religions, and they're turning more from moving from religion to spirituality, and I agree with you 100%. That's where you start getting a deeper sense of the context of what Ben is speaking of, and also the degree I feel we need to reach when we make that change, okay?
Yeah, well said. Anything else, Steve or John?
Well, I just want to thank Ben and his family. I was out at his 95th birthday party back in February, and he was living with his son's family, him and his wife Carol, and they, you know, that's really, shows me what kind of family they had, that, you know, they were still all together even when they were old. Nowadays, you know, most of the old folks are just put away somewhere.
Yeah,
but
right.
not in Ben's family.
Right.
It was a core, you know, loving family, and I just really love that about them.
Okay, we're going to have to wrap it up. Thanks to Richard Mabey and Steve Mann, John Kerman, and Jeff Humfeld. I'm Mike Murphy. We're going to go out with Teresa Wilkie and this week's calendar of events, and stay tuned for Fiesta Musical.
Now the calendar of events for the week of November 26th. The status of Kansas groundwater resources will be Monday, November 26th, 7 p.m. at Trinity Lutheran Church, 1245 New Hampshire Street, Lawrence, Kansas. This Jayhawk Audubon program features Don Whittemore speaking on the groundwater resources of Kansas, including both quantity and quality issues of supply. Bridging the Gap has flexible shifts to stuff envelopes at their West Bottoms office from November 26 through November 30, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Volunteers must register in advance, minimum age 18. For more information and to sign up, please contact Amy Smith at 816-561-1062 or email volunteer@bridgingthegap.org and mention your preferred date and time. On 11/29 at 6:30 p.m. at Californo's, 4124 Pennsylvania Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri, there'll be Green Drinks, KC, featuring Winston Apple and Jared Owsley, who will be joining us to talk about how the recent election may impact environmental issues. They'll try to cover both sides of the metro, Winston on the Missouri side, Jared on Kansas. There'll be a Sustainability Action Network meeting Thursday, November 29th, 6:30, in the Lawrence Public Library, Study Room 3, 7th in Vermont, Lawrence, Kansas. Lawrence Douglas County Bikeway Plan Open House is Saturday, 12/1, 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Lawrence Public Library, 7th in Vermont. December 1st, Kansas City Wildlands has their 18th annual Red Cedar Christmas Tree events in Milldale Farm, Edgerton, Kansas. They're looking for volunteers. Generally, volunteer shifts will be 3 hours between 8:30 a.m. and 3 p.m., minimum age 13 with adult. All volunteers must register in advance by contacting bridgingthegap.org. On December 1st, 12 to 3 p.m., there'll be a street tree planting in the Waldo neighborhood, Kansas City, Missouri. Volunteer to plant trees in the Waldo neighborhood between Warnall and 75th Street. No prior tree planting experience is necessary. Tools and equipment will be provided. Register in advance by contacting bridgingthegap.org or call 816-561-1086. They'll be sowing seeds, a restoration of the Lawrence River Trail, 1 to 3 p.m. on December 2nd at the 8th Street Boat Ramp, North Lawrence, Kansas. Native Lands LLC and Friends of the Kaw, Kansas Riverkeeper, need volunteers to spread seed over the reclaimed areas of the Kansas River Trail. Thanks to volunteers, invasive species have been cleared out from over 4 acres of forest this fall. Now help fill in those spaces with the seeds of native grasses and wildflowers. They'll rest all winter and sprout in the spring. These items and more can be viewed on the Eco Radio KC Facebook page and at the kkfi.org Eco Radio KC program page.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.